Chapter 4. What is his big chief one? Sight, maybe. Hearing, maybe. Instinct, maybe. Magic, maybe. Take your choice, grown-ups. 25. Children and servants, half price. Now I'll tell you what he can do. You can start here, and just disappear. You can go, and hide wherever you want to. I don't care where it is, nor how far, and he'll go straight, and put his finger on you. You don't mean it. I just do, though. Weather's nothing to him, elemental conditions is nothing to him, he don't even take notice of them. Oh, come. Dark? Rain? Snow? Hay? It's all the same to him. He don't give a damn. Oh, say including fog, perhaps? Fog. He's got an eye he can plunk through it like a bullet. Now, boys, honor bright, what's he giving me? It's a fact. They all shouted. Oh, on, Wells Fargo. Well, sir, you can leave him here, chatting with the boys, and you can slip out, and go to any cabin in this camp and open a book, yes, sir, a dozen of them, and take the page in your memory, and he'll start out, and go straight to that cabin, and open every one of them books at the right page, and call it off, and never make a mistake. He must be the devil. More than one has thought it. Now I'll tell you a perfectly wonderful thing that he done. The other night there was a sudden great murmur of sounds outside, the door flew open, and an excited crowd burst in, with the camp's one white woman in the lead and crying, my child, she's lost and gone. For the love of God help me to find Archie Stillman, we've hunted everywhere, said the barkeeper. Sit down, Mrs. Hogan, and don't worry. He asked for a bed 3 hours ago, tuckered out tramping the trails the way he's always doing, and went upstairs. Ham sandwich, run up and roust him out, he's a no. 14. The youth was soon downstairs and ready. He asked Mrs. Hogan for particulars. Bless you, dear, there ain't any, I wish there was. I put her to sleep at 7 in the evening, and when I went in there an hour ago to go to bed myself, she was gone. I rushed for your cabin, dear, and you wasn't there, and I've hunted for you ever since, at every cabin down the gulch, and now I've come up again, and I'm that distracted and scared and heartbroken. But, thanks to God, I've found you at last, dear heart, and you'll find my child. Come on. Come quick. Move right along. I'm with you, madam. Go to your cabin first. The whole company streamed out to join the hunt. All the southern half of the village was up, 100 men strong, and waiting outside, a vague dark mass sprinkled with twinkling lanterns. The mass fell in two columns by threes and fours, to accommodate itself to the narrow road, and strode briskly along southward in the wake of the leaders. In a few minutes the Hogan cabin was reached. There's the bunk, said Mrs. Hogan. There's where she was. It's where I laid her at 7 o'clock. But where she is now, God only knows. Hand me a lantern, said Archie. He set it on the hard earth floor and knelt by it, pretending to examine the ground closely. Here's her track, he said, touching the ground here and there and yonder with his finger. Oh, you see? Several of the company dropped upon their knees, and did their best to see. One or two thought they discerned something like a track, the others shook their heads and confessed that the smooth hard surface had no marks upon it which their eyes were sharp enough to discover. One said, maybe a child's foot could make a mark on it, but I don't see how. Young Stillman stepped outside, held the light to the ground, turned leftward, and moved 3 steps. Closely examining, then said, I've got the direction, come along, take the lantern, somebody. He strode off swiftly southward, the files following, swaying, and bending in and out with the deep curves of the gorge. Thus a mile, and the mouth of the gorge was reached. Before them stretched the sagebrush plain, dim, vast, and vague. Stillman called a halt, saying, we mustn't start wrong now. We must take the direction again. He took a lantern and examined the ground for a matter of 20 yards, then said, "Come on, it's all right," and gave up the lantern. In and out among the sage bushes he marched, a quarter of a mile, bearing gradually to the right, then took a new direction and made another great semicircle, then changed again, and moved due west nearly half a mile and stopped. She gave it up. "Here, poor little chap. Hold the lantern. You can see where she sat." But this was in a slick alkali flat which was surfaced like steel, and no person in the party was quite hardy enough to claim an eyesight that could detect the track of a cushion on a veneer like that. The bereaved mother fell upon her knees, and kissed the spot, lamenting. "But where is she, then?" someone said. "He didn't stay here. We can see that much, anyway." Stillman moved about in a circle around the place, with the lantern, pretending to hunt for tracks. "Well," he said presently, in an annoyed tone, "I don't understand it." He examined again. "Oh, yous. She was here, that's certain. She never walked away from here, and that's certain. It's a puzzle. I can't make it out." The mother lost heart then. "Oh, my God. Oh, blessed Virgin. Some flying beast has got her. I'll never see her again." "Ah, don't give up," said Archie. "He'll find her, don't give up. God bless you for the words, Archie Stillman." And she seized his hand and kissed it fervently. Peterson, the newcomer, whispered satirically in Ferguson's ear. "Wonderful performance to find this place, wasn't it? Hardly worthwhile to come so far, though. Any other supposititious place would have answered just as well, eh?" Ferguson was not pleased with the innuendo. He said, with some warmth, "Do you mean to insinuate that the child hasn't been here? I tell you the child has been here. Now if you want to get yourself into as tidy a little fuss as, all right," sang out Stillman. "Ohm, everybody, and look at this. It was right under our noses all the time, and we didn't see it." There was a general plunge for the ground at the place where the child was alleged to have rested, and many eyes tried hard and hopefully to see the thing that Archie's finger was resting upon. There was a pause, then a several-barreled sigh of disappointment. Pat Riley and Ham Sandwich said, in the one breath, "What is it, Archie? There's nothing here." "Nothing? Do you call it nothing?" And he swiftly traced upon the ground a form with his finger. "Here, don't you recognize it now? It's Injun Billy's track. He's got the child. God be praised." From the mother. "Take away the lantern. I've got the direction. Follow." He started on a run, racing in and out among the sage bushes a matter of 300 yards, and disappeared over a sand wave. The others struggled after him, caught him up, and found him waiting. 10 steps away was a little wickiup, a dim and formless shelter of rags and old horse blankets, a dull light showing through its chinks. "You lead, Mrs. Hogan," said the lad. "'Tis your privilege to be first." All followed the sprint she made for the wickiup, and saw, with her, the picture its interior afforded. Injun Billy was sitting on the ground. The child was asleep beside him. The mother hugged it with a wild embrace, which included Archie Stillman, the grateful tears running down her face, and in a choked and broken voice she poured out a golden stream of that wealth of worshipping endearments which has its home in full richness nowhere but in the Irish heart. "I find her by maybe it is 10 o'clock, Billy explained. "He sleep out yonder, very tired, face wet, been crying, s'pose. Fetch her home, feed her, she heap much hungry, go sleep gin." In her limitless gratitude the happy mother waved rank, and hugged him too, calling him the angel of God in disguise. And he probably was in disguise, if he was that kind of an official. He was dressed for the character. At 1:30 in the morning the procession burst into the village singing, "When Johnny Comes Marching Home," waving its lanterns and swallowing the drinks that were brought out all along its course. It concentrated at the tavern, and made a night of what was left of the morning. Part 2, The next afternoon the village was electrified with an immense sensation. A grave and dignified foreigner of distinguished bearing and appearance had arrived at the tavern, and entered his formidable name upon the register. Sherlock Holmes, the news buzzed from cabin to cabin, from claim to claim, tools were dropped, and the town swarmed toward the center of interest. A man passing out at the northern end of the village shouted it to Pat Riley, whose claim was the next one to Flint Buckner's. At that time Fetlock Jones seemed to turn sick. He muttered to himself, "Uncle Sherlock, the mean luck of it, that he should come just when." He dropped into a reverie, and presently said to himself, "But, what's the use of being afraid of him? Anybody that knows him the way I do knows he can't detect a crime except where he plans it all out beforehand, and arranges the clues and hires some fellow to commit it according to instructions. Now there ain't going to be any clues this time, so, what show has he got? None at all. No, sir, everything's ready. If I was to risk putting it off, no, I won't run any risk like that. Flint Buckner goes out of this world tonight, for sure." Then another trouble presented itself. Glee Sherlock LLB wanting to talk home matters with me this evening, and how am I going to get rid of him? For I've got to be at my cabin a minute or two about 8 o'clock. This was an awkward matter, and cost him much thought. But he found a way to beat the difficulty. "He'll go for a walk, and I'll leave him in the road a minute, so that he won't see what it is I do. The best way to throw a detective off the track, anyway, is to have him along when you are preparing the thing. Yes, that's the safest. I'll take him with me." Meantime the road in front of the tavern was blocked with villagers waiting and hoping for a glimpse of the great man. But he kept his room, and did not appear. None but Ferguson, Jake Parker the blacksmith, and Ham Sandwich had any luck. These enthusiastic admirers of the great scientific detective hired the tavern's detained baggage lockup, which looked into the detective's room across a little alleyway 10 or 12 feet wide, ambushed themselves in it, and cut some peepholes in the window blind. Mr. Holmes' blinds were down, but by and by he raised them. It gave the spies a hair-lifting, but pleasurable thrill to find themselves face to face with the extraordinary man who had filled the world with the fame of his more than human ingenuities. There he sat, not a myth, not a shadow, but real, alive, compact of substance, and almost within touching distance with the hand. "Look at that head," said Ferguson, in an odd voice. "Why gracious, that's a head." "You bet," said the blacksmith, with deep reverence. "Look at his nose. Look at his eyes. Intellect? Just a battery of it." "And that paleness," said Ham Sandwich. "Ohms from thought, that's what it comes from. Hell, duffers like us don't know what real thought is." "No more we don't," said Ferguson. "Hat we take for thinking is just blubber and slush." "Right you are, Wells Fargo. And look at that frown, that's deep thinking away down, down, 40 fathom into the bowels of things. He's on the track of something." "Well, he is, and don't you forget it. Say, look at that awful gravity, look at that pallid solemnness, there ain't any corpse can lay over it." "No, sir, not for dollars. And it's hissin' by hereditary rights too. He's been dead 4 times already, and there's history for it. 3 times natural, once by accident. I've heard say he smells damp and cold, like a grave. And he, sh. Watch him. There he's got his thumb on the bump on the near corner of his forehead, and his forefinger on the off one. His think-works is just a grinding now, you bet your other shirt. That's so. And now he's gazing up toward heaven and stroking his mustache slow, and now he has rose up standing, and is putting his clues together on his left fingers with his right finger. See? He touches the forefinger, now middle finger, now ring finger, stuck. Look at him scowl. He can't seem to make out that clue. So he, see him smile. Like a tiger and tally off the other fingers like nothing. He's got it, boys. He's got it, sure. Well, I should say, I'd hate to be in that man's place that he's after. Mr. Holmes drew a table to the window, sat down with his back to the spies, and proceeded to write. The spies withdrew their eyes from the peepholes, lit their pipes, and settled themselves for a comfortable smoke and talk. Ferguson said, with conviction, "Boys, it's no use talking, he's a wonder. He's got the signs of it all." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.